Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This week, we've been searching for the ultimate summer song. You know, the one song that perfectly captures the essence of the season. We've been asking our guests, including tonight's musical guest, Hauschka, and we've been asking you. And tonight, we'll play some of our ultimate summer mix that we've compiled from your suggestions.
Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer.
No. No, we'll hear some of your other suggestions for our ultimate summer mix coming up later on Soundcheck. We'll also get a visit from writer Mark Spitz. He'll join us to explore the idea of twee culture, from its origins in the fantasy worlds of early Disney films to gentle indie bands like Belle and Sebastian. But first... When you think of ghost towns, you probably think of tumbleweeds rolling down the empty main street of some frontier town in the American West. And the sound? Maybe the wind, a distant, far-off harmonica. You wouldn't expect this. That's because this music is about a different abandoned town. Namely, Stromness, on South Georgia Island in the South Atlantic. It's one of 10 different ghost towns from around the world that inspired the new album by Hauschka, the German musician and composer. Hauschka, real name Volker Bertelmann, plays the prepared piano, and wait till you hear what he's done with, or to, our Steinway. This piece is named after the Namibian mining town called Elizabeth Bay, and it's a live performance from Hauschka on Soundcheck. Thank you. Believe it or not, that was our piano at work. Hauschka, the German pianist and composer, and a live performance of a piece called Elizabeth Bay. Hauschka is Volker Bertelmann. He has a new album out called Abandoned City. And Volker, good to see you again, first of all.
Good seeing you, John.
Elizabeth Bay is an abandoned town where?
It's in Namibia, and it was actually a gold diamond mining city, and I think they found diamonds in the 50s or 60s there, and then they ran out of diamonds, and the people left. People left, and seagulls were taken over.
Seagulls?
Yes. Okay. They were taken over the city, and I heard actually like a half a year ago that they found diamonds again, so people are moving back into the town, and the seagulls have to leave.
So, we think of ghost towns in America as something out in the desert, but this one is pretty close to the coast of Southwest Africa there.
It is. And it's what I think is always great is that you have actually ghost towns everywhere. There are 2,500 ghost cities in the world, which is, I think, amazing to... I was not expecting that when I was starting to research.
Yeah. So where did this idea for doing an album about abandoned towns, ghost towns, where did that idea come from?
Well, it was more, a lot of people are asking me, have you been to all these places? And of course,
that's a nice... I was going to ask you that.
But sorry about taking the question. But the original idea was coming from finding a metaphor for my feeling when I write music. And it was... I don't know if you have that, but when you are concentrated and you work on something very intensively, like for hours and hours, you forget to eat maybe sometimes, mm-hmm. or you just wake up in a way of, I was working 5 hours. And then this moment sometimes is a little bit strange because you feel somehow lonely and maybe isolated a little bit.
A little dislocated.
Yeah, dislocated. And on the other side, you feel fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And I was actually thinking that abandoned places have exactly the similar mixture of hope and disorientation in a way, and also maybe of loss of time, maybe end of time, also something of death in a way.
Mm-hmm. And you found 10 cities, 10 yes. abandoned ghost towns yes. in various parts of the world, and there's a piece for each of them on Hauschka's new record. Right now, it looks like someone has dumped the contents of their closet inside our piano. Because, as Hauschka, you have specialized in playing the prepared piano.
Yeah.
Which basically means you change the sound of the instrument by putting things on the strings.
Yes.
I mean, you've got something that looks like a marble in a bit of tin foil.
It's actually a tea light, the packaging of a tea light, like the aluminium
okay.
packaging.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I put a marble in there, so when I actually hit the note, the marble jumps into this little bucket, and so
it makes that rustly metal rustling sound.
Exactly, and I mean you find a lot of like very interesting things that are working by themselves. So I don't have to care about them; I just have to start them somehow, and that makes it very interesting for me to. I feel very inspired by mm-hmm. these little toys that are in a way are activating my imagination,
And you can, so what are some of the other things that are over there inside the piano right now?
Well, I'm using a little tom that is, I found that in Istanbul. It's a children's tom, like a kind of drum.
A frame drum, yeah.
Yeah, and it actually creates this enormous like percussive sound,
yeah.
which I think is you can actually create rhythms with that. I'm using clarinet reeds to create a kind of snare sound.
That's a clarinet reed?
Yes, that's
wow.
two clarinet reeds that are between the strings. I'm using an art eraser that is doing a kind of wooden sound.
Right.
The first thing I used was light foil from light filters.
Uh-huh.
From lights like blue and red ones.
Yeah, they like have the gels, they're called.
Exactly,
yeah.
the gels. And they create this kind of very sweet rattling on top of the like a kind of hi-hat sound. There was a rumor that red ones sound different than blue ones. That's not true.
Gee, a rumor that's not true. Who would have thought? But now you actually are adding some electronics back into this for this record.
Yes,
right?
Now I'm using actually the sound source as the piano in total. There's no other. I'm even creating bass drums with a pickup that is hit by a hammer mm-hmm. a hammer of the piano. So everything that is in there is created by the piano, but I'm feeding that back into delays and reverbs, and that creates a kind of very interesting, even electronic sound with just, you know, a sound source that is my own. And right. I don't have to go into sample libraries and, you know, find every bloody bass drum.
Because it's all inside the piano.
It's all in there. And I just move a stick a centimeter towards the other direction and I have a different sound.
Yeah. So. It's amazing what you can do with a piano when you have somebody like us who will let you do those things to their
piano.
Well,
thank you so much.
We're speaking with Hauschka, a.k.a. Volker Bertelmann, the German pianist and composer. Hauschka's new record is called Abandoned City. 10 abandoned cities from around the world inspiring each of these pieces. Krakow is next. Now, this Krakow, it's not Krakow, Poland.
No, it's actually called Krakow, and it's C-R-A-C-O, and it's a city in Italy. It was actually the background, like the venue or the background of the film The Name of the Rose. They were shooting the film there, and people had to leave the town because the earth under the city was disappearing, and so they had to leave the town because it might...
Too many landslides?
Yeah, yeah, it might have collapsed at some point. And yeah. I actually received an email from somebody who lived there when it was still, you know...
Inhabited,
and he wrote me, and he was really happy that I actually, dedicated a song to their city. And there's also, I think, suddenly you see that there are people trying to keep up the memory of the city, you know. And this is maybe the only city on my record that is a kind of ruin. So I think I'm not sure if there will be anything happening with this town again.
Well, let's hear the piece. It's called Krakow, named after this medieval ghost town in Italy. It comes from the album Abandoned City by Hauschka, but this is a live performance here on Soundcheck. From Hauschka, another live performance of one of his Abandoned City pieces. Abandoned City is Hauschka's latest record. That piece is called Krakow, named after a medieval ghost town in Italy. How much of this music will change from performance to performance?
Everything. I mean, I'm a big fan of believing that every art form, in a way, or every kind of packaging of music has its own purpose, and everything needs a certain attention. And so, you know, when I work on a record, I'm not thinking so much about performing this. In the past, that was always the case. You try to find out, how can I perform this? Mm-hmm. But in a way, that is also a limitation, because you feel that when, for example, when I'm doing 100 shows a year, I feel like, 100 times repeating the same song, I would be maybe after 20 times, I would be already maybe thinking more about my holidays, or, you know, planning on family vacations while I'm performing it, because I learned everything, which is not always the truth. I mean, there are a lot of performers that do great shows, and they repeat their songs every evening. In my case, I have to say, I'm really happy to use the moment and, to actually incorporate my feeling when I arrive in a place and have a different piano, have a different room.
So every night, the preparation of the instrument, first of all, every instrument is slightly different.
Yeah.
You can put the exact same stuff in the exact same places, but if it's a different piano, it'll sound different.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remembered my first WNYC appearance was in a church, actually, at the Society of Ethnical Culture.
Yes.
That was, for example, a good example for, when you perform some percussive sounds and you play in a kind of reverby space, everything is getting very, like, meshed up, and you don't get, like, really precise in the rhythm. So if you go then more into a kind of etherical sound, that's much nicer. And so either you go the way that you play every night on the same stage with the same PA system, with the same sound guy, in the same measurements, you know, which a lot of bands are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Or you do it like me, who is actually, a lot of people that invite me, they look for very special places. So they either invite me, for example, in a monastery, or they look for a museum, for a special room. So
Now somebody will set aside a ghost town for you to come and play in.
I would love to. I mean, I already imagined, I was already sitting with my buddy in one. So, you know, that's the start.
Abandoned City is the name of the latest Hauschka effort, and we've been hearing some of it played live here in our soundcheck studio on our Steinway, which is none the worse for the wear. It's worth pointing out, all these preparations easily come off. Volker, one of the things we've been doing all this week is asking our listeners and our guests for their choice for the greatest summer song ever. As we head into summer now, is there a song that for you sort of crystallizes that season?
Well, first of all, I have to say, if you are from Germany, you know, you have a lot of bad summers. Which means, you are mostly in a melancholic mood, well, in summer, because you always wait for the day of sunshine. It actually changes a little bit since the climate change. But, you know, there's always the suffering. And I especially in the area where I live, in the Rhine area, we have a lot of rain, and it's always a little misty and stuff like that. But I was actually spontaneously thinking about a song that I was listening to when I was, you know, in a hip hop band. That was a song by Arrested Development, and I think actually they always sing this chorus called Everyday People, something like
the Sly and the Family Stone song,
yes.
Everyday People, and then they used it and they called it People Every Day.
Yes, exactly. And it's I actually love this kind of choir in there, like, Everyday People, you know. And then I was actually thinking that this is a awesome chorus and an uplifting song. So that would be some summer song that I would always listen to.
For a gloomy, misty summer day on the banks of the Rhine.
Yes.
People Every Day from Arrested Development does it for you.
Exactly.
Volker Bertelmann is Hauschka. Hauschka's latest release is Abandoned City. And it's always great fun to have you with us here in our studio in New York. Volker, thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
If you liked hearing Hauschka's live performances, visit our website to see photos of what exactly he did to the inside of our piano. Plus, you can listen to the full session with an extra song. It's all at soundcheck.org. This week on the show, you've been helping us build the ultimate summer mix by suggesting the songs that say summer to you. We'll listen to some of your suggestions next on Soundcheck.
Summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match head.
This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. If there's one song that appears to say summer to you Soundcheck listeners, it's this one. The Lovin' Spoonful's Summer in the City. Quite a few of you suggested this track for Soundcheck's Ultimate Summer Mix, which is available for you to listen to and to take to your next barbecue or beach day right now at soundcheck.org. As Kat from Norwalk wrote on our site, you can't beat the Lovin' Spoonful's Summer in the City. But then there are the Beach Boys, Eddie Cochran's Summertime Blues, The Contours' Do You Love Me, Cool Jerk by the Capitals, Joe Cuba's Bang Bang, See What You Started.
Almighty Jack.
Cuba's Bang Bang. Well, that's an interesting suggestion. Another one that we heard multiple times was Theme from a Summer Place. We got suggestions for three different versions of that song, actually. Donna from New York suggests the version sung by The Letterman. She writes, "It was a great make-out tune, languorous, just like those summer nights."
There's a summer place where it may rain or storm, yet I'm safe and warm within that summer place. Your arms reach out to me, and my heart is free from all care. Seen through the eyes of those who are blessed with love, and the sweet secret of a summer place is that it's anywhere when two people share.
We also appear to have a bit of a feud brewing at soundcheck.org. Stacy from L.A. recommends Summertime by DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm, just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the Alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme, and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime.
But Alan writes that Mungo Jerry's In the Summertime blows the Will Smith version out of the water.
In the summertime, when the weather is hot, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind. Have a drink, have a drive, go out and see what you can find. If a daddy's rich, take her out for a meal. If a daddy's poor, just do what you feel. Speed along the lane, you can turn or a turn of 25. When the sun goes down, you can make it good and live by. When I grab people, when I dirty, when I mean, we love everybody, but we do as we please. When the weather's fine, we go fishing or go sailing in the sea. We're always happy, last we're living, yeah, that's our philosophy.
You can get Soundcheck's Ultimate Summer Mix right now at soundcheck.org. And let's go to the Soundcheck listener line. Here's a call from Aaron.
I think best summer song was Lightning Seeds and Pure. And I think that was in the summer of 87. Thank you.
Night time slows. Raindrops splash rainbows. Perhaps someone you know could sparkle and shine.
Thanks for the call, Aaron. And when party rocker Andrew W.K. stopped by our studio a few days ago, we asked him what his favorite summer songs are, and here's what he had to say.
Well, there's so many, but the one that first popped into my mind, as you can imagine, has the word summer prominently in its title and chorus, Hot Fun in the Summertime by Sly and the Family Stone. I I like it because it's cheerful. It's not a stressful summer song. It's not complaining about the heat. And it's a song that even if it's not summer, it puts me in that nice, perfect 75-degree, sunny, breezy state of mind.
That's Andrew WK's pick. Now, someone who also uses just two initials, J and Z, from Brooklyn, left this message on soundcheck.org. A great summer song need not be about the summer. For me, it's always been that song that seems to click as the hot weather comes and defines that summer in your memory. In the summer of 98, doo-wop, that thing, was ubiquitous. Cue the open fire hydrant.
Yo, yo, my men and my women, don't forget about the dean. This is not the most the king. Yo, it's about a thing. Yeah,
feel real good when your hands in the air and lick two shots in the atmosphere.
Since you were looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamins? Yeah. You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gonna pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, and you probably can. Talking out your neck saying you're a Christian. A Muslim sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gonna tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you thinking it's a trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gin, baby girl. Respect is just the minimum.
Doo-wop, that thing, from Lauryn Hill. Here's one more suggestion for our ultimate summer mix from Joe, who suggests Animal Collective's Summertime Clothes. He writes that it places you into a sweltering summer evening and then gives you reasons to enjoy it.
Sweet summer night and I'm stripped to my sheets. 4 minutes leak and my AC squeaks. And a voice from the clock says you're not gonna get tired. My bed is a pool and the walls on fire. Soak my head in the sink for a while. Chills in my neck and it makes me smile. But my bones have to move and my skin's gotta breathe. You pick up the phone and I'm so relieved. You slide down your stairs to the heat. The strain of the sun is left as a slippery feet. And I want to walk around with you. And I want to walk around with you. And be here with you.
Thanks to everyone who contributed to Soundcheck's Ultimate Summer Mix. It's available. You can stream it right now at soundcheck.org. Up next, we trace twee culture, nerdy glasses, ukuleles, and all, back to its roots with author Mark Spitz. He says it goes all the way back to the 40s. That's coming up next on Soundcheck.
Who's that girl?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. A new book is taking a hard look at nerd glasses, the rise of Zooey Deschanel, and the cultural behemoth that is Brooklyn, and tying them all together as a twee movement. Music journalist Mark Spitz includes everything you'd imagine, from Portlandia to Pitchfork, but he also argues that twee reaches farther back, all the way to Walt Disney in the 1940s. Mark Spitz is here to talk about this somewhat controversial term and how it's become mainstream. Mark, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me, John.
So, Zooey Deschanel, what makes her the queen of twee?
Well, I don't think a movement becomes a movement until there's like an icon or a figurehead. I think that you needed Sid Vicious for punk to be solidified,
right?
You know, and she is sort of in that league. She is the mainstreamer. in a way that now she's on, like, you know, she's got her own clothing line for Tommy Hilfiger, and she's on television all the time. But she still has that tether to the indie world. She's very divisive, obviously. I mean,
well, what is it that makes her twee? Is it the ukulele? Is it the clothing?
I think that it's a combination of that, and, you know, she's clearly got, like, taste in bands from the 60s and 70s that are prized by twee record collectors.
Give me first a dictionary definition of twee, and then what you mean by twee in the context
sure.
of the culture.
I sent out interview requests to potential interview subjects and received in return nothing but the dictionary definition of twee as their rejection.
Uh-huh.
So it still is a pejorative word. It means I think the derivation is from Old England English, and it's literally like a child's way of saying sweet. That a child who can't pronounce sweet says twee. Twee,
yeah.
like the flowers smell twee. But in a larger sense, it means overly precious, sickeningly sweet, mm-hmm. Affected.
Well, I mean, if Zooey Deschanel is the queen of twee, the sort of court jesters of twee would have to be Belle and Sebastian. I mean, they're the band that, you know, when you say twee rock, I think this is the band most people would think of.
Certainly. And they've gotten... the bigger they've gotten, the less they've sort of thrown it over the side like ballast. I mean, they still are themselves. They're still the band that made like Tiger Milk but they've become a huge festival headlining band with you know, instrument endorsements and a big, you know, big stage and a big sound.
Well, let's dip into the twee playlist with a song from Belle and Sebastian. It's called. It's got a somewhat twee title. It's called This Is Just a Modern Rock Song.
I'm not as sad as Dostoyevsky. I'm not as clever as Mark Twain. I'll only buy a book for the way it looks, and I'll stick it on the shelf again. Now I can tell you what I'm thinking. Never seems to do you good. It's beyond me what a girl can see. I'm only lucid when I'm writing songs.
This is just a modern rock song.
Belle and Sebastian, the name of the band. The song is called This Is Just a Modern Rock Song. Mark Spitz is with me. He is a former senior writer at Spin. He's also written for Rolling Stone and the New York Times and published biographies of David Bowie and Mick Jagger. His latest book is Twee, The Gentle Revolution in Music, Books, Television, Fashion, and Film. So talking about twee culture, which, you know, we think of, you know, Glasgow in the 1980s
yeah.
and bands like Orange Juice. There are filmmakers like Wes Anderson. And, you know, I think people who have thought about twee culture would expect to find those names in your book. They might not expect to find a name like Anne Frank.
That's tricky because I didn't want it to feel exploitative at all, you know, but I do feel like she belonged in the book in the sense that she was a huge part of twee is fighting bullies.
Right.
And in her own way, she was defiant. She kept, obviously, creative while she was
right, the
in the
diary.
Annex.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the diaries were discovered and sort of embraced by others who had a similar, you know, she became an inspiration.
So did she become twee posthumously because she was seen as a kind of icon of this behavior by people who came much, much later?
Yes. She prized things like film and she wanted to learn. And she was deprived of that. And then obviously there's the connection to the Neutral Milk Hotel record in The Airplane Over the Sea, which I write about, which is, I don't think they've ever formally admitted it, but it's supposedly a concept album about
yeah.
Anne Frank and the diary.
Well, Jeff Mangum is pretty, I mean, you
yeah.
read the lyrics, it's pretty evident.
So I respectfully include her as a wartime, almost godmother of Twee in a way that Salinger is a godfather. And the diary itself is among the literary canon of Twee, along with things like The Bell Jar or Where the Wild Things Are, or later on Dave Eggers and
the McSweeney's folks.
Yes, you know. Exactly.
But she is, as you say, Anne Frank did turn out to be a huge influence on the band Neutral Milk Hotel, and especially their 1998 album In the Aeroplane Over the Sea, and even more specifically, this song called Holland, 1945. Classic indie album, In the Aeroplane Over the Sea, from the band Neutral Milk Hotel. That song is Holland, 1945, inspired by the diaries of Anne Frank. And as Mark Spitz tells us, that makes Anne Frank a kind of godmother to the Twee movement that he writes about in his book Twee, The Gentle Revolution in Music, Books, Television, Fashion, and Film. The book is out on June 3rd. A panel discussion and book signing at the Powerhouse Arena on Thursday, June 5th at 7 p.m. here in New York. Mark Spitz with me in the Soundcheck studio. So Anne Frank gets a mention in the book, J.D. Salinger. Walt Disney, how is he Twee?
Twee is about a tether to childhood.
Okay.
The innocence of childhood. The imagination of a child. You think of people like Charles and Ray Eames and what they designed. And I don't remember Disney World, but I've been to Disneyland. A place designed not to change with modern times. I believe they're not allowed to. I don't know this for a fact, so don't quote me.
But go ahead and say it on the air anyway.
I believe the people who are employed there aren't allowed to like show their iPhones and stuff like that. Like
okay.
It's an idyllic place, a fantasy world. And after seeing the carnage of World War I and witnessing a Second World War, the kind of films that Disney made champion the underdog. If you look at Dumbo, these are classic, beautifully rendered films also. And that is a key point in Twee is the workmanship quality. There's no difference between making your own jam and making Pinocchio. Uh-huh. You know, it's artisanal and beautiful. So regardless of his personal life, what he chose to publicly express and the fact that he had ingenuity, his Imagineers, you know, the people who he employed, qualify him as a godfather of the movement.
Well, and in fact, I mean, you refer to one of the songs from one of the classic Disney films as the ultimate Twee anthem, and that is this song.
When you wish upon a star, make no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you. If your heart is in your dream, no request is too extreme. When you wish upon a star, as dreamers do.
When You Wish Upon a Star, from Walt Disney and the film Pinocchio. Mark Spitz, the author of the book Twee, The Gentle Revolution in Music, Books, Television, Fashion, and Film, refers to that as the ultimate Twee anthem. That kind of, I mean, you talk about being tethered to childhood.
Yeah, it's the simplicity. It's the sentiment also, but it's really just the beauty and the simplicity of a song like that. I read somewhere, I don't know if this is true, that inspired Brian Wilson to write Surfer Girl.
Yeah, yeah,
obviously pop music gets more and more complex through the 60s, but if you think about the beat, Ian MacDonald wrote this great book called Revolution in the Head, which is about the Beatles in the studio, the late rock, British rock critic. And if you think about what they were doing circa like Rain and Paperback Writer, or what Brian Wilson was doing circa Pet Sounds, you know, there's a fundamental simplicity to the melody. But they were playing like children in the studio. Uh-huh. What happens if we slice a microphone, you know, in half? Like, how will it sound? You know, so it's a combination of that, like, really fundamental, the kind of melody that a child would hum on his own or her own, and innovation and mm-hmm. imagination in a Disney-esque sense, bringing it back to Walt Disney.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and by the way, it depends on what day you get me. I mean, I have other like this is the ultimate Twee anthem. It depends on how drunk I am. Sometimes it's Linus and Lucy by the Vince Guaraldi Trio. Uh-huh. You know that doom. Book is designed to spark debate.
Well, that actually seems to me to be a job well done, because, you know, I can already imagine the comments coming in on the website at soundcheck.org. It's like, what is this guy talking about? It's like, you know, it seems like you have cast a very wide net in and pulled in all these different figures as part of this gentle revolution that you call Twee.
Yes.
What kind of backlash have you gotten to
Well,
this?
Well, do you know the filmmaker Whit Stillman? He did Metropolitan and Barcelona and The Last Days of Disco.
Yeah.
He's in the book.
He's in the book, yeah.
And he said early on, he was one of the first few people that I interviewed, and he was like, Mark, don't write this book. He's like, because the problem, he's like, I'll tell you what your problem is. You know, he was one of those people. Uh-huh. The other, I think years ago for Spin, I interviewed Gene Simmons, and he's like, here's what your problem is. You just let the tape roll, and they talk and talk. And he goes, in order to write a book like this, you're going to have to draw lines to things that like aren't meant to have lines drawn to them. You're going to have to suture everything up into a neat package, and you know. I'm holding my book up now. It's a neat package. and there's going to be an element of you're sort of forcing them together, yeah. You know? And that's kind of – it was good advice, actually. Yeah. And I was wary of that. And I didn't want to put the square pegs in the round holes. And there were some things that I would have lingered on naturally, perhaps the Smiths or things like that, that I sort of like – you know, kind of mention and then move along. You know, this isn't – this is – 200 some odd page book, or you know, I didn't want to write an encyclopedia. I didn't want to write a handbook. I wanted to really write a history, and in order to do that and encompass everything, you need a great editor, and also you know you have to sort of be willing to kill your darlings a little bit. You know, she would go less Smiths. That's what she always used to say.
Is it a Twee book?
Is my book a Twee book?
Yes.
Well. No, I don't.
Your answer speaks. Your non-answer speaks volumes.
Is it? I suppose that the way I have answered this, and probably the way I will answer it again, is that I had to keep my Twee gene recessive and my reporter gene dominant. You know, mm-hmm. So it would have been a much more Twee book. Or could have been a much more Twee
if you'd been left to your own devices.
But it's got it smells like Twee.
It smells like Twee spirit is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Mark Spitz is the author of the book Twee, The Gentle Revolution in Music, Books, Television, Fashion, and Film. And he's been with us here in the Soundcheck studio. Mark, good to see you again.
You too, John. Thank you for having me on the show.
During our conversation about Twee, we mentioned Zooey Deschanel, the star of the Fox TV series New Girl. She's also one half of the band She and Him with Matt Ward. And a few years back, that duo was here in the Soundcheck studio. Take a listen to this live performance from their session, and we'll leave it up to you to decide whether they're truly Twee. Here is Sing, performed live on Soundcheck back in 2010.
Talking on the phone and watching Cribs. He doesn't know what kind of guy he is. He's got a gold-plated ceiling and a TV show, a broken heart, and he doesn't even know. He's glad to see you. Yes, he's
glad to see you.
Open your arms and sing. World's been waiting, they've been waiting for years, and they've just gotta hear it. The kids are waiting, they've been shedding tears, so open your arms and sing for us. World can be quiet when you're up too late. I'm just a childhood prisoner of the garden gate. Broke, then kick it, dust yourself off, find a quiet place and have a good laugh. I'm glad to see you, yes, I'm
glad to see you.
That's She and Him. Grammatically challenged, perhaps, but a musically adept duo of Zooey Deschanel and Matt Ward singing a song called Sing. That was live here in the Soundcheck studio back in 2010. You can hear their full session with us at soundcheck.org. On our next show, singer-songwriter Jill Sobule returns with her band and with a couple of writers, David Haydu and Harper's executive editor James Marcus, to talk about Dottie's Charms. That is Jill Sobule's new story-filled album, inspired by a charm bracelet with lyrics by 10 different authors. Plus, we'll talk with journalist Lydia Denworth about her book, I Can Hear You Whisper, which chronicles her experiences as the mother of a deaf child. We'll talk about cochlear implants, the deaf community, and the impact that deafness has on early education. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, and Mike Katziff with Amy Pearl and Krista Ripple. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.